Bess pulsing against my back. See you tomorrow. When we're out of earshot, I whisper to Vivi, you'll see him tomorrow? We eat breakfast together sometimes. Before I can even ask, Becca jumps in front of us. She pretends to cast a spell on Isaac, who dodges.
I want to be the sorceress,
Leah exclaims.
You can't be the sorceress, you're the princess. Now silence!
Becca moves her hands in a billowing motion, as if calling magic against Leah.
Silas!
Leah shrieks.
It's not fair, she's being mean!
I wait to feel Vivi slide to the ground. Because, really, who wants to spend their summer listening to this? Who wants to witness Silas try to break it up without tears? But Vivi only tightens her hold around my neck, shimmying her legs up higher on my waist. She stays.
Chapter 7. Vivi. Here is something I never expected to feel. Love at first sight for an entire family. But life surprises you. It tells you to close your eyes and blow out the candles, and then sometimes smashes your face into the cake before you can even make a wish. But sometimes, every once in a while, you get your wish in. You wish for a boy to spend the summer with. And instead, life gives you his whole beautiful family. It's a good thing I'm so crazy about them because they're always, always around. In the week since I kissed Jonah, we've been alone together exactly once. And it was not the right time. Now, as he smiles over at me, hitching the beach bag up on his shoulder, the sun feels even hotter on my face. The second our feet hit the beach, Leah and I take off running, kicking up sand. We squeal as we hit the water, and I lift her up and spin her so that her toes skim the ocean in big circles. When we get too cold, we turn cartwheels in the sand with Becca. Jonah's setting up the beach umbrella, which Isaac has planted himself beneath, already reading his book.
Hey, Jonah calls from our little camp. Sunscreen!
The troops report back and assemble, Becca digging into the cooler Jonah brought. She examines the popsicle packaging, looking for the colors beneath the white paper, dark berry and tangerine. Do you think they make mango popsicles? Passion fruit? I ask, smearing more SPF 100 onto my arms and legs. Or pomegranate? Becca examines her pineapple popsicle. I bet Jonah could make them. I look back at Jonah, my eyes hidden by big cat-eye sunglasses. Leah's rubbing sunscreen onto her nose while Jonah gets the back of her arms. He takes out her low ponytail, gathering her hair into a little bun at the top of her head. It's sloppy, but second nature, his hands twisting the hair tie. The sweetness aches somewhere in my ribs. It could wreck a girl. This handsome guy, shirtless in the summer sun, making sure his little sister's neck won't get burned. For most of the day, his eyes stay on the littles, watching Leah splash at the edge of the water, supervising the sandcastle construction, and anticipating fights. He's always reading their moods and needs, and it's only once in a while that I catch his eyes on me. But when I do, he gives me a slow smile, like we're both in on a secret. Jonah Daniels and his gaze are enough to make a girl feel like she emerged from a huge seashell in the middle of the ocean, like the painting of Venus, surrounded by sea foam. And maybe I did. I don't remember being born, and I wouldn't put it past my painter mother to pull it off. Also, I'm not going to pretend like I don't look fabulous in my bathing suit. It's a polka-dotted one-piece that covers up an ill-advised tattoo, with a halter top that does my chest a serious favor. I wear 1,000 bangles on my left wrist for panache. We splash and we reapply sunscreen, and we cover Isaac in sand, sculpting a mermaid tail for him. Our hours at the beach melt together like the box of sticky popsicles. And when it's time to leave, I walk a few yards away to finish the last item on my beach to-do list. Using a small branch Isaac found for me in the banks between the shore and cliff line, I spell out careful letters in the sand. Vivi was here. Even though I know the tide will rip my memorial away.
Another one?
Jonah's by my side, admiring my handiwork. I guess he's seen me do this before. Earlier in the week, I convinced Jonah to plant more flowers in the backyard of his house. We helped the littles dig with spades, and I told them about biology and sunflowers and sprouts. And I made some of it up, but that's okay. On our last seeds, zinnias, I took a scrap of receipt paper from my purse and scribbled, "Vivi was here," on the edge. Then I buried it in the dark soil alongside the brand new almost plants. Once they grow, I'll still be in there somewhere. We were so dirt-covered when the plants were finally all in the ground. But we took turns under an outdoor shower that Jonah said their family hadn't used in years. An outdoor shower. Beach living at its magical, practical best. Like making a rainstorm whenever you want one. Viv? Jonah nudges my arm with his elbow, bringing me back to him.
Why is that? All the you were here's.
Because it's all so fleeting, isn't it? The ocean existed so long before us and will stay long after us. Most trees, too, and some animals. Isn't that crazy? My dress collection will live longer than I ever will. I can't help the sigh that slips out. Oh, how I'd love to be eternal in one life. I'm just looking for some kind of permanence, so my mark will linger on the world once I'm gone, in the places where I found joy. Does that make any sense? He places his hands in the pockets of his swim trunks and rocks on his heels. He's wearing black shades, but I can tell he's still studying the ridges of each line, each letter.
Yeah, I've just never thought about it like that before.
There, right there. Some kind of pain is pressing itself into Jonah's skin. A cigarette burn for each time he thinks of it, and I am ready to know what it is. The anticipation of being alone together grows like steam in the air. But that heat is not why I need to get him alone. At least, not at first. It's because I want to know if he's ready to tell me about the pulsing sadness that I feel in this beautiful family. An undercurrent beneath us. By the time we walk home, the sun is descending into a sherbet sky. And I have a plan. Leah is asleep on Jonah's shoulder, little mouth hanging open a bit. Becca and Isaac are tiny, exhausted zombies lumbering toward their own front door. I love the Daniels residence, which is tucked back from the street, surrounded by low trees that are so deep green they look almost blue. When I asked, Jonah said the house is a craftsman bungalow, but all I know is that it's white and homey, especially with fireflies hovering around the yard. The image that comes to mind is a magic cottage in a fairy tale.
There you guys are.
Silas leans against the open front door.
I was starting to think the ocean swallowed you up.
Isaac ducks in, and Becca's behind him, setting our huge beach bag in the foyer. When Jonah sets Leah down, she stands on her own but keeps her eyes closed. Silas chuckles, scooping her up, and he turns to go inside. Let's not go in. I catch Jonah's hand in mine. He startles a little. Like I've broken a barrier between us. Silas and Naomi can take it from here. Let's go get ice cream for dinner. Just us.
Okay.
He smiles. But it's a halfway smile because he's tired. I know he's tired, that he is weary, and I want to know even more.
Silas? Vivi and I are going out to eat.
He knows Silas won't mind because we've had the littles with us all day long, and he's overdue for a break. After a week of life with the Daniels family, I'm starting to learn the expected give and take between three teenagers who seem in charge of their whole family. As we start down the street, Jonah keeps a hold of my hand, and I'm lost in thought of their little world. I'm in love with Leah, of course, and her limitless imagination and infectious giggle and the unselfconscious way she plays with my hair. I love Isaac and his obsessions and tiny glasses and spiky hair. Created with some sort of gel clearly stolen from an older sibling. I'm in love with Becca and her preteen moodiness and eye rolls. The way she's still a carefree child until she catches herself and slips back into sulkiness. I'm in love with Silas, his immature jokes meshed with responsibility for the littles. Even Naomi, obstinately making me earn her friendship. And I'm failing so far, which only makes me try harder. And Jonah,
Oh, Jonah. That boy did me in that first night at his house. Seeing him in his natural element, cooking and surrounded by his rambunctious family. Such a precarious balance, and yet he let me right in. What a heart. And since he can be so serious, I nudge him with each slow afternoon, with hip bumps as we walk along, with looking over at him right this very moment, and biting my lip as if it is a random tick, which it is not. Jonah is so stuck in his weariness that, of course, he doesn't realize anyone else sees him. When we walk down the street together, girls always glance over quickly at him. Once we pass, they turn around to get another look. Of course they do. Jonah is a truly beautiful boy. That gorgeous hair and olive skin, and strong arms from carrying groceries and his little sister. He has those deep, dark eyes that show he carries a lot of heavy things inside himself, too. In town, we order 2 ice cream cones, mint chocolate chip for him and Rocky Road for me. We came here earlier this week to eat banana splits, and Isaac ate so much that he almost puked, which was sad and also hilarious.
Thanks, Patty,
Jonah says to the woman who hands us the cones. Then Jonah holds the woman's eye contact, gesturing toward the staircase.
Do you mind?
Nah, she winks at him. Just be careful. I trail behind Jonah as he moves up the stairs at the back of the shop. The upstairs floor looks more like an old house than an ice cream parlor. There are a few framed paint-by-numbers, a door with a glass handle, a bathroom maybe, and another door, which Jonah opens. It goes out onto a flat tar roof, which seems sturdy enough. The view is spectacular. A front row seat as the neon sun dips her round belly into the ocean below. Wow, I breathe, settling next to Jonah on the edge of the roof. We both dangle our legs off the edge, and I'm disappointed to find a fire escape right below us. If we fell, we would be fine, which is a shame. Ice cream, cute boy, and sunset on a roof. The only thing missing is a little buzz of danger. This is probably the longest I've ever been quiet in my life. We walked the whole way here in the quiet, and now I look at this boy, whose eyes seem burned out behind the smokescreen of warm brown irises. Oh, Jonah, you look so tired. His smile is wry.
I am so tired. I've been tired for months.
Well, we fit together like mint ice cream and chocolate chips, Jonah, because it takes me a while to get tired. All night long, I dare the stars to outlast me, and I'd say the score is about even during the average week. So you get some extra sleep, and I'll stay up for both of us. How about that? He glances sidelong at me, not fully committing to a look.
Can I ask you something?
You can ask me anything, Jonah. I knew he'd open up if we were alone and I was quiet enough. So I kick my legs against the gutter, happy to wait. The wind off the ocean tousles his beautiful hair. Like the cold front knows all my dirty thoughts and will exploit them. I am so crazy about Jonah's thick, almost curls that even the atmosphere knows it. He stares down at his ice cream cone instead of licking it, even though the mint is softening by the second, threatening to drip.
Why haven't you asked about my parents?
I've noticed the lack of parent in the Daniels household. Of course I have. They've said enough that I know their mom is upstairs and maybe ill. The Littles use the phrase, my dad used to. But I don't know if he's dead or if he left, or if something else prevents him from being around. Maybe he's institutionalized or deployed. Jonah doesn't watch me while I think. He eats his ice cream and stares out at the waves. Well, let's just say I have my own personal fun facts that I keep close to the vest. I take a lick of my Rocky Road, rotating the cone in my hand to smooth the ice cream into a rounder shape. If there were things you wanted to tell me, I figured you'd tell me in your own time.
Oh.
He looks genuinely relieved.
Okay. Good. I thought you didn't ask because you already knew. Like someone in town told you.
Come to think of it, Whitney did mention something the day I met Jonah. She made him seem haunted, followed around by ghosts who tug at him in the silent spaces.
My dad died 6 months ago. That's what they would have told you. heart attack. I take this information like a knee to my gut, an oof sound almost escaping my lips. It knocks the wind out of me, despite the breeze pushing extra air against my face. I imagine the sweet faces of this beautiful boy and his siblings, and I nearly have to gasp for breath. Oh, Jonah.
I don't like to talk about it. I mean, I'm not good about talking about it.
The ice cream cone droops from his hand, nearly dropping to the fire escape below.
And my mom is, I don't know. She pretty much stays in bed. We keep thinking it'll get better, but I'm not sure how much longer we can keep it up. Silas is supposed to go to college in the fall, and I don't know. I can't take care of the littles by myself.
He swallows, his Adam's apple making a barely perceptible shift at his throat. Then he lifts his hand as if to shade his eyes, and instead rubs a tense space of forehead, massaging right above his eyebrow.
She does have good days. She usually goes to church on Sundays. Sometimes she gets up and showers, and sometimes she even goes to the grocery store. We've tried to get her to a therapist, but it just makes her cry when we bring it up. Naomi keeps saying it's clinical depression, and she needs to be on medicine, but my mom won't hear about it. God, this all sounds so crazy. I hear myself saying it, and it sounds crazy.
Jonah, I swear on my favorite vintage dress that what you're saying is not crazy by my standards. Sad? Difficult? Yes. But there is nothing crazy about that kind of grief, especially when it's totally justified and normal.
You call it normal to be despondent for 6 months?
With a snort, he finishes his waffle cone and dusts off his hands. Maybe. I shrug. I can't really say. I've never been madly in love with someone for 2 decades, and had 6 babies with him, and made a life with him, and then had him ripped away from me in one instant. So, I'm not sure what's normal for that. He winces, taking that in.
Well, now I feel like an asshole again.
Again? His hand goes back to the spot on his forehead.
About a month after my dad died. Felix reminded me there's a difference between grief and depression. His son has dealt with depression, so he would know. And it's like you said, my mom's grieving. I know that. I just think it maybe slipped into depression. How can you even tell? 6 months seems like too long to stay in your room.
I almost say that I think it's a good sign that he said she still cries, but I close my mouth because that seems like a cruel sentiment. But what I mean is, depression, it settles like a shadow over your body while you sleep, and it mutes every frequency into blankness, into fog. Everyone thinks you can't laugh when you're depressed, but I couldn't cry either, because I couldn't feel. Instead, I put it back on Jonah. Are you mad at her?
Yeah.
He looks up, guilty and bewildered at the sound of his own voice, like the words slipped out of his mouth without his mind's permission.
I've never admitted that before. I've never even thought it before. Maybe I'm not mad. I know it's not her fault. I just hate this. I hate it for her, and I hate it for me, and I hate it for Leah and for Isaac and...
You're doing everything you can, you know. Taking care of everyone. Shouldering all the responsibility to give her time to grieve. I pat his leg. You're doing everything. Jonah bobs his head, as if he hears me but doesn't quite believe it. I'm overwhelmed with sadness for him, but I still feel a sense of wonder up here beside him. We're on the rooftop of the world. And I think of kids like us somewhere in Madrid or in Sydney, or Hong Kong. And I wonder if they spend their summers getting as close to the stars as they possibly can.
Well,
he says, sighing.
Am I a beach day buzzkill or what?
Oh, you stop that. Then a sigh catches in my throat, too. Because I don't like what I have to say next. If I hate thinking about it, then I loathe talking about it. But I'll do it for him. I know I act like I don't have a care in the world. But, Jonah, I've prowled the dirtiest back alleys of sadness, okay? And I know what it's like to fight for your life on those mean streets. So if you need someone to vent to, or someone to be quiet with, or someone to talk your ear off, I can be that person. I'm not scared of the dark places. Thanks, Viv.
He does look relieved, leaning back against his arms, so his chest rises toward the sky.
I thought you might bail if you knew. It's a lot, my family right now.
I'm a lot too, Jonah. Then I lean back, matching his posture exactly so that we're stomachs up to the setting sun. And you don't have to worry about things like that with me. If I met a boy who was perfectly whole, in mint condition with no dings, well, I swear to God, I think I'd fall asleep on the spot. And you know that's not easy for me. His eyes watch me from their corners until a sly smile creeps onto his face. What?
Nothing.
He can't shoo the smile away.
I'm just really glad you're here now.
I'm glad you're here now too, Jonah. So we stay there above the town, being here and being now, until the last possible moment, until the last scrap of sunbeam lights our path back across the roof and through the door and into whatever happens next. Later that night, I'm wishing Jonah had kissed me on the roof, even though we were talking about sad things, things that could wrestle your soul and pin it to the ground. It's late, technically, but not by my standards. Maybe 1 a.m. or so. And I'm working on sewing projects in my room because, well, what else am I supposed to do at this hour? I'm ripping a hem on an old dress, prepping it to become much shorter and cuter. And this can be fairly boring work. So I entertain myself by imagining many different scenarios in which Jonah is a sexually aggressive person. And it's just getting good. When my phone beeps. Oh, I hope it's Jonah. And it is. He's asking if I'm awake, which of course I am. Beep again. Look outside. I'm glittery with anticipation as I push my window up. And sure enough, Jonah Daniels is standing below, on the driveway. Hey! Night Wind shifts his hair, and he shoves his hands in his pockets, as if he walked all the way over here and chose this moment to get sheepish. Hey! I try to sound casual, which is difficult when you're yelling down to someone. What's up?
I can't sleep, even though I'm exhausted, so, do you want to go on a walk down to the beach?
With you? I ask, teasing him. He shoots me the look that says, give me a freaking break, Viv, I'm trying here. So I grin. Always. Be right down. I'm wearing a navy blue nightdress with thin straps and little edges of off-white lace. It covers as much of me as any daytime summer dress, so I figure it's just as well. I pull on an oversized cream cardigan, and I close my eyes, trying to decipher how it feels. It feels like I rolled out of bed and pulled on a sweater to walk to the mailbox. Close, but not exactly right. Faux pearls. I layer strands and strands of chunky costume pearls around my neck. And yes, precisely, I am a girl who rolled out of bed to have an impromptu beach date with a boy. I prance down the steps and see my mother's form in the glow of the TV. She's watching a French film with subtitles, one hand cradling a glass of white wine. Her head turns, and she finds my gaze over the back of the couch. A knowing smile twitches at her mouth. Where do you think you're going? I'm sneaking out, I say, ruffling my curls. Can't you tell? Oh, yes, very subtle. She examines me. Same boy? Jonah? Yes, same boy. I huff, wounded.
I want to meet him, Viv. I mean it.
I turn fully, horrified. What, like, now?
Is he here now?
No. It's a flimsy lie, too reactionary. I'm usually better than that. Maybe. Yes. We're just going for a walk. He couldn't sleep.
Then, yes, I'd like to meet him now.
When I don't move, she pulls herself up, lengthening through her spine.
I'm sorry if you don't like it, but Dr. Douglas said...
Fine, I snap, unwilling to hear another word about it. I turn toward the front door, but I think better of it, swiveling back to my mom. Can you not ask about his parents? Her head leans slightly to the side, long hair pooling in her lap. I see her gathering the fragments. I spend all this time with his siblings, no mention of parents. He's here late at night, unable to sleep. It's really hard, I say quietly. And recent, okay?
She nods, the determined parent expression falling a little. Jonah isn't the opponent now, a possible threat to her daughter. He's another child, as I am to her. Jonah stands in the driveway with his hands still in the pockets of his khakis, which are rolled up to his ankle. I like this, that even when he dressed himself and left his house, he knew for sure he'd be taking me to the beach. I grin as I walk gently across the asphalt, leery of rogue pebbles. There's just no ever-loving way that I'm wearing shoes on a night like this. It's bottom-line insulting to the gorgeousness of a summer night.
Hey,
Jonah says, before I can reach him. Hey, perfect timing. I was just thinking about you. I clutch his hand, pressing my lips together. But just one thing. My mom wants to meet you.
Oh, now?
Yeah, I know, she's being so weird. Do you mind coming in really quick? I swear she's not going to interrogate you. She just wants to see that you're a normal, functioning person, and then we can do whatever we want.
Sure.
I can see it in his eyes, though, that this is not the evening he had in mind. Ugh, Mom, this would have been so romantic without interference. Inside, the French actors are discussing something passionately on the TV. My mom rises from the couch, wine still in one hand. I forget, because I'm with her all the time, that my mother is sort of a presence. She has waist-length 70s queen hair and this sweeping way of walking in flowy blouses. I can almost hear Jonah swallow. Mom, this is Jonah.
Hello, Jonah, my mom says, taking him in. And I can guess what she's thinking. Huh, a guy in khakis, no half-shorn hair or visible piercings or tattoos.
Not that she minds those things. Jonah's just the first unadorned guy who's made it to meet my mom status. I can't tell if she's disappointed or impressed. See? I present Jonah like he's a prize on The Price is Right. Normal. And cute. Good job, me. Let's go. I grab his hand and try to tug. But his feet stay planted.
Nice to meet you.
He reaches his other hand out to my mom.
Sorry. Vivi just told me outside that I had to be normal. I haven't had adequate time to prepare for this role.
My mom smiles genuinely at this, amused as she shakes his hand.
Nice to meet you too. I'm Carrie. Vivi tells me that she's been spending time with your 5 brothers and sisters.
Oh, yeah.
He glances at me, almost sympathetically, as if I do not adore every moment with them.
There are a lot of us.
And where do you fall in the lineup?
Is this really more important than me walking on the beach with this very cute boy? I ask my mom in an attempt at telepathy. What are you doing to me? But Jonah's already answering the question, perfectly comfortable standing here, while I am clenching his hand like, let's go.
In the middle. We separated into 3 oldest and 3 youngest, bigs and littles. I'm the youngest big.
Sounds like fun.
I'm glad Vivi found you all.
Okay.
She smiles at Jonah, then at me, dismissing us.
Thank you for indulging me.
Not too late, Viv, just a walk.
I say, my back already to my mom, while Jonah calls, Nice to meet you. There's a path of worn wooden steps down to the ocean, and we take it. Jonah tells me about working at the restaurant, about the bustle and the customers, and the funny line cooks who work with him. When we reach the part of the beach that is littered with driftwood debris, he bends his knees, offering himself for a piggyback, and I climb on. He hitches me up and steers us until we hit the shoreline, and I clamber down from his back and press my feet into the sand. A single yellow flag beats against the ocean wind, and the sky stretches for every mile of ocean, and then longer and farther. We're the only people as far as the eye can see, and all the world feels like a private show, screened on the endless black sky. The universe is unfurling its whole self to us, arms wide and beckoning. My feet veer toward the water. I just have to touch it, you know. It's the former dolphin in me.
Careful.
His voice is soft, a warning in the warm air.
He's such a dad, I swear to God. It's like he can't stop himself.
The riptide can be really strong.
I know this, of course. That's what the yellow flag is for. To notify vacationers that the water at night can be grasping and iron-fisted. I've always loved that the tides are caused by the moon, I explain. I give him my most enticing grin, trying to melt him into a more relaxed version of himself. So far away, but so beautiful, so powerful. I can always feel it tugging at me, too. He laughs, but he's not mocking me. No, I'm not sure if Jonah could ever really mock someone, not the way that other people do. Maybe you don't feel it yet because you weigh more than me, but I feel it. As real as a lasso around my waist. I hold my arms up, as though a rope has a hold on my midsection, and I follow it toward the water, toward the moon. It's cold, the water, but I'm up to my calves before Jonah speaks up.
Don't go too far,
he warns.
It's not like Verona Cove has lifeguards.
I throw my sweater onto the sand so it will be dry for the walk home. Oh, Jonah, lifeguards are such a myth.
What? Lifeguards are not a myth. We just don't have them here.
My knees are wet now, and I spin to look at him, talking louder so he can hear. Do you really think that a lifeguard, one single person, could stop the universe from taking you if it really wanted you?
I mean, I think that's why they have mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
He emphasizes the last word, like he's making his point with a 5-syllable fancy word that he clearly misunderstands. Well, sometimes the universe gives you back, when it doesn't want to take you yet. It just wants to remind you that it could, if it wanted to. The water hits the hem of my nightgown, and now my whole lower half feels supported. Ah, yes. My soul knows this feel of submersion, of fluidity and bottomless freedom.
Vivi, you're getting soaked, and you can get in serious trouble for being in the water after the beach closes.
He has waded in ankle deep, but I'm up to my waist, and we have to raise our voices to hear each other. It's freezing cold, but I can't even really feel it because I'm loving this way too much. Jonah, for God's sake, you used to be an otter. Give in to that instinct. I fling my arms out, and they reflect pale moonlight, with dark freckles like pinholes on my skin. Give in, Jonah Daniels! He makes it up to his knees, and I am so confused by his reluctance. I'm telling you, these beach townies, they simply do not appreciate the majesty that sidles up to their backyards. I can practically see Jonah's brain clicking away. Must calculate risk. But I want him to shed the grown-up parts that he needs to care for the littles. And just for tonight, do what makes him feel something. But I like the way his dark hair whips in the summer wind, so I'll forgive him for his pragmatism. I move toward him so I'm only thigh-high in the water, and I press my wet palm against his dry forehead. A drop of salt water slips down his nose, and I say, Jonah Daniels, I baptize you in the name of the God of Midnight Swimming. May he...
The God of Midnight Swimming?
Well, I say... You may know him as the moon, but he has many formal titles that I don't want to get into right now. What was I saying? Oh, right. May he protect and guide you so you'll stop being such a goddamn buzzkill and start acting like the supernova that you are. Jonah looks at me like I'm absolutely off my rocker. Or maybe it's a look of amazement, like I'm a whole galaxy, glittering and vast and unchartered. But then he smiles in this way that makes me feel known. And now I can't think of anything but snacking on black cherries at the beach earlier today, the way he licked the juice off his lower lip. I close my eyes a split second before he kisses me, and I clutch the hem of his t-shirt to stay planted against the swaying waves. His hands are on my neck, pulling me in, and the ocean floor drops out from beneath us, and the moon himself whispers, "Damn." It is nothing like that first quick kiss, where I was moving on impulse. This is an exchange, intentional and charged. Yes, we are doing this. Yes, yes. The difference between a happy summer day and a hot summer night. We're knee-deep in the ocean, and I'm starting to think I'm in over my head. so I throw my arms around him and hang on, kissing him wholeheartedly, but without the where is this going, and does he like me, and what does this mean? And I know there are people who would judge me for this. Even Ruby once asked, "Gosh, Viv, do you keep track of how many guys you kiss?" Nope. Because listen here, sisters. It's summer, and this boy is handsome and kind, and frankly, I want to kiss anything that makes me feel so seen. How do you like them cherries? When we finally move apart, we're breathing faster than when we started. Jonah's eyes are more open than before. But not in height or width. In depth. Like he's more awake. Mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, indeed. I expect to feel triumphant, but all I can do is stare back, clinging on to him still. My vision tilts, perspective shifting like everything I see is now 1 degree different, finally clicked into place. Like an opera singer on stage who believes she is the performer, only to find the orchestra, its earnestness, its unexpected soul, nearly moving her to tears. You mean to give, and find yourself taking and taking, soaking it in. All right, fine. Jonah grins as he takes my hand, and we run into deeper waters, gasping at the cold and the beauty.
Chapter 8. Jonah. I don't like running, but I do it any time Silas can be home in the morning. My feet plod along the sand. Really, it's a fast-paced slog. I have an old iPod with shitty battery life, but it works. When running along the beach, I listen to metal. I used to hate the sound of all that screaming, but now it helps. It usually drowns out my thoughts, but not today. Vivi has been by my side for almost 2 weeks now, but I needed to angst alone this morning. My worries woke me up early, pestering me like Leah on Christmas morning. I crept through rare silence in our dark house, left a note, then drove the car a few miles down the coast. I didn't want to run in Verona Cove, down Main Street or along the beach path like I normally do. I needed to run in a place where memories don't fill my peripheral vision, the ghosts of who we used to be watching me like marathon spectators. I'm following a trail of questions down this long stretch of sand. What the hell are we going to do? Will Silas really defer college? Do I finally tell Felix that I think my mom needs real help? And my dad's heart problem? I know it was genetic. Can I even get checked for that? After my dad died, I looked up the most heart-healthy foods. Now I make oatmeal almost every morning for my brothers and sisters. They seem to understand that I have to do something. So I invent flavors to keep it interesting. Peanut butter banana oatmeal, maple syrup walnut oatmeal, strawberry powdered sugar oatmeal. When they demand pancakes as a change of pace, I use a recipe that includes oatmeal and chocolate chips. I'm not sure if shoving the maximum amount of oats down all my siblings' throats is the best heart health plan, but it's better than nothing. My dad was naturally big. Not round, but tall and wide. Vivi would say he was descended from redwoods. All of us kids have my mom's build. Medium height and lean. Naomi and I have my dad's Sicilian dark hair and eyes. The rest of my siblings have the lighter coloring from my mom's side. Ever since he died, I've been looking for my dad in Silas and Isaac, watching their faces for his nose, his expressions, his eye crinkles. Felix says I'm more like my dad every day, but I don't see it. Vivi relieves me of these thoughts. She lives in overdrive, and I have to work to keep up. It takes so much energy that I can't concentrate on my own crappy life. She fills everything with new memories so that my life feels like more than exactly like it was only minus dad. She makes me drive an hour to the nearest Target so we can ride the bikes up the aisles, and Leah can play with the bouncy balls until the manager asks us to leave. She writes a play with Isaac about an old-timey baker named Paunchy Paul and the many critters that sneak into his bakery late at night to eat his bread. In the one-night-only performance, Isaac played Paul, complete with our dad's chef hat, a pillow stuffed down his shirt as a fat belly, and a mustache drawn with Vivi's eye makeup. Vivi was costume director, lighting director, and head mouse. Becca played a mouse in one scene and a raccoon in another. Leah played the squirrel that persuades Paul to bake them miniature bread stuffed with acorns. I baked bread to use as a prop, and Silas and Naomi whistled as they bowed. My mom didn't come down, but the next morning, the littles reenacted their parts in her room. She laughed at their silly happiness until she cried. I hustled them out the door and left her in peace. The memory makes my legs push harder against the sand until they burn. Vivi never gets weird when I'm sad or frustrated or pissed about the state of my family right now. I don't know much about dating, but I know enough to be grateful that Vivi doesn't push. I dated a girl named Sarah last year, my longest relationship ever, and she pushed like a wrecking ball. I still like her as a person, but not as a girlfriend. She's tiny and feisty, like a little Yorkie dog. I like that she was in charge of about half the clubs at school. When we were little, she was the girl who got every colorful Girl Scout badge and outsold everyone in the tri-state area during cookie season. She thinks success is a quick 1-2 punch of deciding what to do and doing it. In the first days after my dad died, Sarah was nice to have around. She's prepared, just as a lifestyle choice, prepared for any situation. She does things like pack a whole purse full of tissues when she attends your dad's funeral. She even had a bottle of baby aspirin, like she knew my sister would cry until her head throbbed. But then I became her project. She was extra peppy. All positive thinking and up and atoms. When I couldn't decide to be happy and then do it, when my grief wasn't an easily conquerable goal, well, the yipping grated against my eardrums. Jonah, she told me, it seems like you're not even trying to be happy. Happy, I thought. I'm nowhere freaking close to happy. Happy is a distant continent. I was thrashing in the storm. Sarah didn't understand anything about my life. I hated being hustled out of pain I earned. That's why I broke up with her. It's why I won't hustle my mom out of pain she earned. Sarah didn't cry when I ended it. She got huffy and mad. I guess I was probably the one project that talked back to her. Also, the only one she couldn't finish, with honors. My life still sucked, but at least it felt like mine again. The sweat cools on my body as I head back toward the car. I've been impaled by my own thoughts this morning, and it's time to get back to distracting myself. But I can't actually cook to get my mind off everything. I make up recipes in my mind, like arugula salad with grapefruit and avocado slices, and feta with a champagne vinaigrette. Maybe some kind of nut macadamia? I'm not sure yet. I can't always try them in reality because some of the ingredients I'd want to use are expensive and not practical for a family of seven. But I do think I have some tip money at the restaurant from a wait shift I covered for Felix last week. Money is complicated right now. My parents inherited our house from my grandparents, so at least that's paid off. Since Naomi, Silas, and I all work, we pool enough money to buy groceries and gas every week. Naomi takes care of finance stuff, so she talks to my mom about paying bills. There's money from life insurance, but it won't last forever. During the third month of our mom's departure from reality, Naomi downgraded our already meager cell phone plan, got rid of the landline my dad insisted on keeping, and canceled our cable. Ironically, my mom has a degree in accounting. She did the restaurant's books and worked a little during tax season. Not this year, though. When I pull into the restaurant parking lot, Felix's car is already there. It's weird that he'd get in at 8 a.m. and that he'd drive. He always walks from home. I use my dad's key, now mine, to the back door, and I'm surprised to see not Felix, but his daughter Ellie. She's peeking around the prep counter. Oh, hey, Jonah. I thought someone was breaking in. Ellie, hey, what are you doing here? Freezer inventory, just finished. She gestures to a piece of paper on the counter. I thought your dad was doing that later today. Yeah, but I lost a bet. family game night thing. He and Lena smoked me and my mom. We bet Freezer and Venturi, so I had to pay up. As she steps around the counter, I can't help but notice she looks more like her mom than ever. She's almost as tall as me, all arms and legs and thin torso, and she's holding a frying pan in one hand. Making an omelet, too? She wrinkles her nose. Grabbed it out of reflex, in case you were a burglar. A burglar with a key? You never know. She spins the pan around once, like we're gonna duel. It makes me laugh. So what are you doing here? Getting tip money out of the safe, I say. I covered a wait shift for your dad last week. She smiles, up on her tiptoes to put the pan back. I've wondered before if Ellie does yoga or something. Everything about her is relaxed. Her movement, tone of voice. Well, I'm glad to see you. How's your summer going? It's okay, thanks. How about you? She shrugs. Pretty good. I got back from my grandma's a few days ago, and the rest of the summer is wide open. Working here a little. I heard you have a new girlfriend. Good for you. Oh, yeah. Is Vivi my girlfriend? It's only been 2 weeks, but it feels like a whole summer already. But I don't know what to call her, and she teased me if I tried to bring it up. Sometimes she treats me like a boyfriend, other times like a friend with benefits, sometimes like a science experiment. She pokes and prods at me, asks me strange questions. Are you guys coming to the bonfire next week? I'd love to meet her. Ellie slips into the office, setting down the inventory list. The bonfire is an annual tradition for Verona Cove locals and the two tiny towns nearest us, right after the 4th of July. I think so. Silas drew the short straw, so he has to stay home with the littles. But I'll be there, and probably Naomi, too. Ellie looks back at me, frowning. Is your mom out of town? Stupid. I let it slip that my mom can't watch three kids. No, yes, well, kind of. Just for that night. She's driving down the coast to meet up with an old friend or something, I think.
Oh, okay.
She slides out of the office and past me, smiling hesitantly. Well, see you guys there then. I can't believe I lied to Ellie. When I was 11, I split my knee open trying to keep up with Silas and Diego, Ellie's brother. Ellie, even though she was only 10 at the time, dabbed ointment on the cut with a cotton swab and smoothed a band-aid over it. She's good to her core. I step into the office, stooping down to the safe. I sift through to a little plastic bag with my name on it. As I'm squeezing out of the office, I shake my head, smiling. As usual, there are papers strewn all over the desk, and even taped up on the wall. Felix, like my dad, takes the "it's not messy if I know where everything is" approach. But my eye catches on something. A red stamp on an envelope, blaring past due. It's half hidden behind another envelope, but I lift it up. There are a few more below it, all stamped in bright reds, addressed to my dad. So much for the oatmeal and the running. I'm about to have a heart attack. The sound of knocking at the door nearly does me in. I grip my chest in surprise, and it takes me a moment to recover. I slide the envelopes back under the papers. I figure it's Ellie, back because she forgot something. Instead, I open the back door to Vivi. Hey.
I'm on my way to work, and I saw your car parked here.
But she doesn't look happy to see me. She looks wounded.
Who was the girl I saw leave?
Oh, just Ellie, Felix's daughter. I swear I see her lip tremble.
You were here alone with her?
Aw, crap, I am in a situation. I wasn't with her. I stopped in to get my tip money, and she was doing freezer inventory.
She watches me still,
judging every moment.
She's pretty.
I've never seen Vivi be anything but joyful, and I can't tell if she's teasing me. She could actually be jealous or mad. I'm pretty sure I didn't do anything wrong, but there's no handbook.
I've known her my whole life, Viv.
She considers this.
Almost like she's a sister to you?
No, not exactly.
Yeah.
That was not convincing, Jonah. She crosses her arms, waiting for me to plead my case. Okay, switching tactical approach away from defense. I'll play flattery on the offense. It's easy because I mean it. Viv,
what?
You are the only girl I ever think about. It's true. This makes her smile, almost shyly, which is not a typical Vivi adjective. The smile spreads, bright red and scheming. Without giving me even a moment to prepare, she leaps onto me, locking her arms around my neck. She kisses me like someone with failing lungs, like her only source of oxygen is me. If someone had asked me before I met Vivi, "Hey, Jonah, do you like a girlfriend who is all over you?" The answer would have been yes. But of all the quirks about life with Vivi, her ready-or-not approach to kissing me is the most disorienting. She goes from zero to pouncing in less than 3 seconds. I never see it coming. She'll be barely paying attention 1 second, and then in the next second, grab my face like she's been marooned on an island, and I'm the first guy she's seen in years. I'm not complaining, but I can't do this here, not in my dad's kitchen. Not with those envelopes tormenting me. My mind can't shut off enough to kiss her back. I expect my dad to walk in any moment and ground me until the apocalypse. He won't, of course. And that thought makes everything worse. Really? The place where your dead dad feels most alive is probably the least sexy location ever. Viv, I say, setting her down on the prep table. She keeps her legs hooked around my waist. I can't, okay? Not here. Where my dad, I just... Sorry. I wince preemptively. There's a good chance she'll storm off. Instead, she releases her legs and wipes her lipstick smudges from my mouth. Of course. Rain check. I just couldn't resist you, handsome devil. We stay there together for a moment, eye to eye. She slides her finger into my hair as if she can actually get a hold of my brain. Then she gives me that look. Her blue eyes trying to cut right through me. She searches. All right. What's going on in there? I shake my head, and she moves her hands down to my neck. The way they're wrapped, her thumbs could get an easy read on my pulse. The restaurant, I don't think it's doing as well as I thought it was. I think there might be some money problems. Oh. Her lips twitch downward for a split second. Then she hops off the table. Then you should fix it.
Fix it?
Yeah. Make changes to improve business. I hold my arms out at my sides because I can't quite speak the word.
What?
I'm annoyed that she'd treat this like nothing. My dad's legacy, his life's work, failing, and I'm helpless. I'm not an econ major, Viv. I don't know a damn thing about, like, finances.
Jonah,
Vivi squares her hands on my shoulders. You know this restaurant better than you know most people. You know what it needs the way you know what Leah needs, yeah?
I can take care of Leah, sure, but I can't take care of everything.
I can't take care of my mom. I have no idea what she needs. Nothing Vivi ever says is as simple as she makes it out to be.
Okay, listen. I know what you're thinking.
She pulls out a lipstick from her purse and reapplies it.
You don't want to make changes to something that was your dad's.
Because then you'd be admitting that there are imperfections to his work here, and by extension, that he had imperfections too.
And I get that. I honestly do. But you're not dismantling his work if you're adding to it. You're helping a dream grow more, not cutting it down.
I hadn't even thought of any of that. Now I will. I can't keep up.
Okay,
she says, standing on her tiptoes to kiss my cheek.
I've got to get to work, but you percolate some ideas like the little coffee pot of genius that you are. If I were you, I'd start with redoing the patio space, and I'd do it soon so you could throw me a birthday party there. Because that's what I want, officially, okay? That is my formal birthday wish, and you should be glad because I was going to ask for a Vespa. Now I've decided all I want is a party on the Tony's patio, so make it happen. See you tonight, at which point I will be redeeming my makeout session rain check. Fair warning.
She turns to wink at me, then disappears out the door. Vivi has this way of leaving me shell-shocked. She never notices. Or maybe she does it on purpose. I have no idea. In the quiet of my dad's old kitchen, I find that Vivi's right. Somewhere in the folds of my brain, I've been storing ideas for the restaurant for years. since way before my dad died. I'm not saying the ideas will work, but I do have them. Menu changes and updates to the design of the space in different ways to draw tourists in. I wander out to the patio space, which I've never really thought about. There's not much to it. The restaurant has this built-in nook made by the exterior, two perpendicular brick walls. Years ago, my dad poured cement for a floor and installed a low wrought iron fence in the two open sides, making an L shape. But that's kind of it. There's an old grill out here, a rusty ladder, an extra propane tank, and a bunch of other crap. From the street, you can see the patio if you're walking from uptown. That must have been how Vivi saw it. I don't know if outdoor dining would draw more customers. I don't know if it would be worth the work, but it'd be nice to put my backbone into something, especially if I can make this old broken space into something nice for Vivi's birthday. So I sit on a stool by the prep table, with a piece of scrap paper from the office. I'm not sure how long I sit there, scribbling down ideas. Entrees that have never sold particularly well that could probably be replaced. Foods people ask for that we don't have, but we could. I'm still writing when Felix comes in the back door.
Hey, Manny, I saw your car. Thought you were off today.
I was just stopping in. Now or never, Daniels. No wussing out. I just hope Felix takes me seriously, man to man. But I got to thinking about the patio. We could fix it up for almost no money. It might be a nice draw for customers.
Hmm,
Felix says. We always did mean to, but never got around to it.
That'd be good for business, right?
Outdoor space? He nods.
Could be.
Business is okay, right? I mean, decent? The words flash in my head. Past due. Past due.
Oh, sure.
Felix waves me off, but I watch his eyes. I know his eyes like I know my dad's, protecting me from something.
Ebb and flow, the restaurant biz, we're always fine.
I don't buy it for a second.
Well, I've got some other ideas while I'm at it.
Let's hear them, he says, and slides onto the stool beside me. Then he rubs his brow, shaking his head even though he's smiling.
Oh boy, Manny, sometimes it's like looking right at your dad.
I take this as a good sign.
Chapter 9. Vivi. Tonight, sleep shows me images of my friends from home, Ruby and Amala. I'm in Amala's house. It's packed. Music's thumping. And I'm late, I guess. But I find them in the kitchen. Ruby's wearing a plastic birthday crown with a plump pink jewel in the center. I hand over her present, which makes her shriek in delight. And we all take shots that taste like lime, syrupy sweet. Then I flash to the back porch holding smoke in my lungs, giggling upstairs as I slide his shirt over his head, feeling like a perfect vixen. But I scream back at my subconscious, no, no, make this stop. I'm outside, and everyone knows what I did, though I can't remember how it happened. Amala sobs as a crowd gathers to watch the drama, and I'm across the lawn from them. The silly tiara looks so wrong on Ruby's head as she wraps an arm around Amala, trying to calm her. Amala's long hair swinging, her face contorts as she screams, "How could you do this to me, Vivi? Get out of my fucking life!" And I'm gone. I'm gone. I gasp awake in my bed at Richard's house, palms and forehead damp. A nightmare. A memory. A thing can be both. I stare up at the ceiling. White, white, white. The emptiness of it aches. By the time the sun is winking mid-morning, I'm on a ladder in the center of the room. What the hell is this? My mom stands in the doorway with her arms crossed, in a parental way that does not suit her. I found a fantastic inspiration image in a magazine. An accent wall, but the ceiling. Don't worry, I called Richard.
You what?
He left that number for emergencies. I know, but this was a code blue. Bring the paddles, emergency. I told him I couldn't sleep in this goddamn room. Too much blank space, like the walls are white noise and it's screaming at my eyes. I could hear snippets of Mandarin in the background. Serious voices,
probably talking about stocks or bonds or, as I like to call them, soul-sucking tokens of a life lived for the wrong reasons. But Rich hurriedly said those five magic